Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of April, and I'm recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. And also, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes that we follow. But first, let's just have a quick look at today's activity. There was only one thing of real importance, technical importance, in my opinion. And that is the downside dynamics that we saw on Wall Street here today. And what was interesting is that the market was firm in pre-market trading and in early actual trading, and moved slightly higher because the jobs figures were good, but not too good. If they're too good, then people worry more about interest rates going up. But the job numbers were good enough to indicate for both the revision of last month's figures, revision of February's figures and last month's figures for March, that job hirings are increasing, and they are also coming mostly from the private sector. And that's okay. So the market actually liked that. But, you know, we've had all that talk about the new highs and Dow theory and all that. And I think you know my view, because I've mentioned it in the last 2 or 3 days, that, you know, Dow theory will have a lot of fault signals. And but its advocates say that, yeah, that's okay, but when it does get a good signal, it can last for years, and that is often the case. Now, but the big downward dynamics here today, well, the Dow down the least, that was down just under 1%. The S&P 500 was down 1.25%. They look big on the charts, as you'll see, because we've got these key day reversals suggesting that the week's earlier upward moves to new highs were upside failures. Follow through on the downside on Monday, which I would not be surprised to see would add to that impression. But the big one, which is the most convincing, is the NASDAQ Composite Index got hit for 2.6%. Now, NASDAQ, of course, was the runaway leader on the upside. That's where we've had some clear bubble characteristics, both in the computer sector and in the biotechnology sector, and which those are such big gainers last year, and they're giving up ground. So investors are becoming more cautious, as we're seeing in this environment. And the leaders usually lead in both ways. Veteran subscribers will know I've been saying that for 45 years, so and more. that's what we're getting. We're getting the NASDAQ now taking out its last little recent low, and we're going to see a further pullback. Is this the long-awaited 10% plus correction? Well, quite possibly it is, and I'm already on record for saying I thought that would occur between the beginning of the second quarter, which of course started this month, and the third quarter of the year. And I wouldn't bet against it, but let's keep things in perspective. We could get a sharp reaction. If we do, that would provide a short-term buying opportunity. And I would not want to be selling after a reaction. I will always say that. But I have more confidence in saying in this environment, because I don't think there's any likelihood that we're going to go into a bear market on Wall Street. Sharp reactions? Oh, yes. And by the way, my definition of a bear market for Wall Street is not 20%. My point is, let me hammer home the point, that I don't see a really serious risk. And I've said that for the last, 5 years? And the key reason for that, monetary policy. It's too attractive. But valuations are somewhat high. The market is showing signs of a bit of fatigue. The Wall Street bulls market is certainly in a mature stage. So I think it is going to have this somewhat bumpy trajectory in here, and with the bigger risky period being in the second and third quarters of the year, as I've said before. Now let's look further ahead, and what can we actually conclude about various markets? Well, first, in terms of stock markets, to me, the technical evidence, and you've seen those long-term charts that I've posted from time to time, usually using the S&P for illustrative purposes, showing it over 50 years, because we get these long sideways valuation contraction cycles. We've completed that this as of last year, but the process really began in 1999, and we've had a couple of big crashes during that period in 2000 and 2008, which made everybody terrified, got valuations right down. So I think that's behind us, that valuation contraction cycle period. But as we saw back in the early 1980s, when we were moving out of the beginning to move out of the valuation contraction cycle, that we had a decent rally to new highs by the various U.S. indices, and then they pulled back. And the pullback was insignificant in terms of the long-term outlook, but it was tedious and a little bit painful at the time, and it got valuations on Wall Street even lower. I certainly don't think the pullback that we're going to see, I'd be very surprised if it pushed valuations lower on Wall Street. It might put valuation push valuation in other words, it won't push valuations back to anything close to what we saw in 2008 and early 2009. But I've been saying in these Friday audios for a couple of years here that I did expect that we would break out to new highs, and then we would get a reaction and consolidation, somewhat choppy environment for a few years, improve valuations because growth will continue, and then that would lead into the next secular bull market. And for new subscribers, and there are some, I'm pleased to say, and very welcome you are. I have felt for a long time is that Wall Street will have some very special features that will be in its favor. It's not the only country or market to benefit these, but Wall Street's in the pole position still. And the first one, the really big one, is what I have referred to as the accelerating rate of technological innovation. Now, I think this is the most exciting time for technological innovation in human history, and I'm going to continue to say that and forecast that as long as I see the evidence. And I think the evidence is very clear. Just look at everything you've seen in the last 5 or 10 years that's changed technologically. We're actually seeing it change before our very eyes. If you're my age, that wasn't the case for most of your life, but the technology is the rate of change is really picking up, and you go right back since the beginning of time, and it took sometimes centuries for any new development to be discovered, like fire, going way, way back. But you know all that, so let's talk about the future prospects here right now. But I was talking to a scientist last week while I was on holiday. And he was more pessimistic. Technology was not his big thing. It was more of the environmental areas, but with broad scientific interests. And his worry was that all the spending that had occurred was really taking place sort of pre-Reagan, President Reagan, and that government spending on technological developments and so on had all eased, and he felt that the enhancements or developments that we were seeing, or the products that we were seeing technologically, that the seeds for that were all sown back in the 1970s, and that we were going to see that actually play out, phase out. Now, I think that's much, much too pessimistic. I certainly hope so as well. But I just think that you've got these hugely wealthy global autonomies, as I've called them for a number of years, these super powerful companies that are leaders in their own sectors, big global players. Definition of the autonomy is it'll have over 50% of its business outside of its own country and be a global, very much a global leader. Many of these autonomies are more wealthy than their actual than a number of countries, including certainly all the frontier countries and a number of the developing economies. And that's a very exciting development. And we've got I just think we'll see that technological innovation continue, and the evidence is certainly there for us to see right now. Now, the other factor, another big factor here, that and the U.S. is, I should say, is in the pole position in terms of technology right now. And the scientist I was talking to was saying that, well, China's spending much more at a government level on research and development right now. Well, maybe they are, and they can certainly achieve a fair amount, but I just is that going to be as dynamic an environment as we see in some of the Western countries? I have my doubts, but I don't want to digress too much on that because I'll stick to the markets. The big advantage that the U.S. has, in addition to its technology lead, and perhaps a bigger advantage, is its energy policies, because the U.S. invented and developed the fracking process and is one of the few countries to really take it up in a really big, serious way. And it's all available to other countries around the world, and tragically, a good many of them haven't. Well, I say that. The environmentalists say it's appalling because fracking produces too much methane. I've written about methane before, not in recent months, and it is certainly atmospheric pollution contributing to the warming concerns, but it doesn't stay around all that long, unlike the CO2s, which stay around much longer. But at any rate, I think that we'll be far better off to see our economies continuing to grow, use the technological advantages to create alternative energy sources. By far the most attractive alternative energy source is solar, and unfortunately much of the world went on a wind binge, and that was very much a mistake, in my opinion. It is producing energy, but it's very expensive energy and will become even more expensive as those machines will require replacement, and their wear rate will be high, in other words. But solar power is going to be the big dominant renewal factor, and that is more than capable of lowering energy costs around the world 10 years from now, because the efficiency rates, the take-up rate is improving all the time. It's now up 45-50%, whereas most of the solar panels that are in place currently have, they perhaps pick up about 10% of the energy that's available to them. So they're becoming much, much more efficient, and they're not all that expensive. And so that's going to be a huge bonus for the global economy. And who will benefit most from those? Well, everyone benefits, but the people who will benefit the most will be or within the big corporations, because their energy costs will go down. That will increase profitability overall, and the fact that energy costs are going down for individual households, that leads to more consumption spending. So that's a very positive cycle to look forward to. And so one of my long-term forecasts is that we will see lower energy prices in real terms. Now, we're not quite secure on that outlook as far as the next few years are concerned. 10 years from now, I have a few doubts about it. But over the next few years, we can have more problems in the Middle East. Hopefully not, but they seem to be perennial. We can also have problems with you've still got these autocratic suppliers, which can hold the world to ransom, as we have seen over a period of decades. Think Russia here right now. Europe dependent for 30% of its energy on approximately on Russia, and refused to barely look at the whole fracking process. I think this will change. I think all this will change. But in a country like Japan, very, very high energy costs there. It can cost 3 to 4 times as much to manufacture something in Japan and Germany as it does in the United States. So the United States is definitely in the pole position, and it deserves some of its high valuations that we see in here today. But the picture, the roadmap, and I'm speaking without notes in here right now, so I hope I'm not losing you as I jump around a little bit. But the roadmap here, I see choppy stock markets, and I think we'll see that on Monday as well, because other markets will dip on seeing this move in the United States. But choppy, certainly choppy market activity over the next several months, and probably over the next several years, but no horrific blowouts for the global market cycle, such as we saw in 2000 and 2008. What it really is just a process of renormalization for the global economies. We are still within this long recovery cycle from a credit crisis recession, and as I've said so often in these broadcasts, that it takes a minimum of 5 to 7 years for an economy to get back to anything close to a normal growth rate after a serious credit crisis recession. Well, the U.S. is now, it's now 5 years since the end of its credit crisis recession. We go back to the first quarter of 2000 and 2009. So thus that's my reason for expecting a few more years of choppy activity here. And during that period, we will see the end of quantitative easing. We'll see that this year, and we will see also the end of the ultra low interest rates in the United States. It'll take a little longer for that to happen in Europe, in all probability, but all this these ultra low rates will be phased out over the next few years as global GDP growth picks up and returns to what we would regard as a normal expansion. Now, given the big monetary tailwind ride that we've had in the stock markets, just that returning to normal interest rates, that is justification enough for some choppy market activity. But I will also add, in the same breath, that is not a financial monetary squeeze, so it is very unlikely to produce any significant bear markets. And then we go into a secular bull trend, which will be really another super cycle lasting 20 to 30 years to the upside. Those are punctuated with some short, sharp bear markets. 1987. Remember that? It pales when you look at a long-term chart in the library. But it was pretty traumatic at the time. We'll see some of those over the next two, three decades, one or two of those perhaps. But the overall trend will be terrific for equities. It'll be the best for equities that we've seen since the mid-80s up into the mid-90s. That's what we have to look forward to. So I think again the best opportunities are going to be in stock markets. The least attractive area, in my opinion, will be in the bond markets. Bond yields dipped a little bit here today, and if we get a 10% plus correction on Wall Street anytime soon, we'll see those yields dip a little bit lower. If you're in bonds, that'll be a very good time to reduce that exposure. I think the big risks will be in long-term bonds, but that's not a short-term problem. It is an intermediate to longer-term term problem. And I don't think we'll see a return of the inflationary pressures that we had in the late 1970s and the early 1980s, and the reason for that is that we've really got a very much more of a global economy right now than we had then. That all that international competition helps to keep wage pressures down. All the technological advancements, the robotics, other smart computer machines, all help to keep inflationary pressures down. We'll see some food inflation, no doubt, but again, the agronomists have been good at keeping breeding ever more resistant and healthier plants, and farming techniques continue to improve. So I'm not looking for a serious inflation problem in the developed economies. It'll happen in a badly run emerging market inevitably, but not in the healthier developing and also developed economies. So big secular bull market there overall. What will be some of the leaders there? Well, over the medium term at least, I think India will be one of the leaders. I think Vietnam will be a leader in Asia. I don't think Japan, is its bull run is over. I think that'll get another good run. Wall Street, for the reasons that I just mentioned. Europe also, because of its low attractive valuations, more attractive valuations that we have on Wall Street. And hopefully, after all its torturous political economic problems, that we will have better governance, better economic governance within the European Union. Okay, so I did mention that I felt we'd see somewhat higher bond yields over the next few years. That's certainly one of my long-term forecasts, and it's all but inevitable, because you can't have a secular bull market, as we did in bonds, nearly 30 years, in which yields were ranging lower. You can't end that and not have a significant a significant push higher. How did I describe that? It was a secular bull market in bonds with those yields coming lower, defined by those yields coming lower. Well, we're going to have a smaller secular bear market in bonds with yields pushing upwards over the next several years. But as I said before, I don't think they'll get back to anything like the highs in interest rates that we saw in the late 1970s and early 1980s for the reasons I previously mentioned. Now, looking elsewhere, what about currencies overall? We'll get lesser moves in currencies than just about anything else. I think we live in an environment where no country really wants or can withstand a strong currency. The Japanese government was the last to throw in the towel on that. And fundamentally, though, the United States is in the best position here to have a stronger currency on the medium to longer term basis, but it certainly won't want it anytime soon, anytime over the next few years. So I think we'll get a fair amount of currency stability, but we have had some adjustments. I don't think that we'll have a highly vulnerable Indian rupee for any longer because we're going to get much better governance. There, we already have it with the change at the central bank, and we will also have that with the next general election when Narendra Modi will almost certainly be elected, hopefully with a workable majority. China, a bit of an enigma still, but its currency was clearly too strong, and there's now a control that was it was that was a government policy until a month or so ago, and now they are weakening the currency once again. So we'll get a few fringe moves of consequence, but I don't think that we'll see a somewhat weaker Japanese yen, I think, over the medium term. But I think overall, I think we'll see a somewhat quieter period in currencies over the next decade than we've had on many other occasions. The bigger action will be in other markets, with stock markets to the upside, bond markets to the downside, meaning that yields in bond markets go up. But the upside in stock market share price valuations will be far bigger than the bear trend. The bull market in equities, in other words, will be far bigger than the bear market in government bonds and commodities. I think that we will see a firmer tone here for the metal prices. A lot of that depends on China, but these metal prices are a contracyclical sector. Just gonna have a little drink of water here. So, a contracyclical sector which tends to improve during the late stages of bull markets on Wall Street, which is where we are right now. We see the Type 3 base development in those industrial metal prices. We've seen the shares show similar action. And a key point here for shares moving ahead, some of the quote boring unquote old economy type shares. It's the shades of 1999 thinking, when we've had all this fashion and new tech shares on Wall Street over the last few months. That's a much smaller version of the tech bubble that we saw back in 1999, 2000, at the end of the last secular bull market in equities. I would watch out. I would be concerned about downside risk because those shares are going to be high beta, and the NASDAQ is clearly peaked here. But the bullish shares, there are a lot of good value companies out there, including mining companies, that have been ignored for understandable reasons. But I think as we get a more choppy market, and certainly a 10% plus correction on Wall Street would qualify in that department, we will see a more conservative approach on the part of investors looking for big covered yielding shares and just generally lower valuations. Those will be in a lot of the cyclical companies. How did I get back to that when I was talking about the industrial metals? Well, because I think a lot of those miners will be picking up, including for precious metals. And I think that precious metals will, they formed important lows last year, which held early this year. And I think we're in a bit of a, at least a medium term recovery phase. And as far as food prices are concerned, there are turbulent weather conditions which can create havoc. But the key variable there is always supply with food prices. I mean, demand for commodities in general tends to rise over the longer term. It'll slow when you get big recessions, slow in industrial commodities and for oil when you get the big recessions. But overall, the long-term trend is for increasing demand for these commodities. But the big variable is supply, and the supply for the agricultural commodities is much more variable than for the industrial commodities because it depends so much on what is actually taking place in terms of weather conditions. So it's hard to make big long-term forecasts on that. It's full of risks overall. But the initial signals for this year are not all that encouraging about the crop cycle. So I think we will see some food price inflation actually taking place, and we haven't had much of that in the last few years. Wrap it all up. I don't want to hold you any longer on this, but I think the medium to longer term outlook for stock markets, I've said, is very bullish. I think the lengthy medium term, I'm expecting the choppy medium term, short to medium term environment, but lengthy outlook is extremely bullish for equities, bearish for the bond market sector, but not horrifically so. Commodities, there'll be plenty of opportunities, and more appreciation than depreciation in terms of those prices. Currencies, reasonable amount of stability, but at some stage we'll see a significant recovery in the U.S. dollar. But that's probably towards the end of this decade, not the next few years. And on that note, I wish you all a fabulous weekend. All the best.